With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards?
Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
What's up, everybody? Coast to Coast Podcast back at you here from InsideCarolina.com. I'm your host, Joey Powell. And we're brought to you by Johnny T-Shirts. Hey, thanks for being here. Coast to Coast Weekly episode here for you from IC. I'm Joey Powell. With me, as always, the two guys that you are mainly tuning in to hear from, Sherrill McMillan, Sean Moran. Sherrill, how you doing, dude?
Good. It's been a busy week for UNC. Ready to talk about it.
Absolutely. Sean Moran, how you living?
Doing well. A lot of basketball to watch, both college and high school right now. So very entertained.
There is definitely a lot to keep your eyes on. And if you are a basketball fan or a basketball junkie, you are absolutely loving this time of year because it's all over the place and it's everywhere. So this past week, as Sherrill alluded to, Tar Heels in action, a loss at UVA, which saw Armando Bacot get hurt in the first 90 seconds of the game, really changed things for the Tar Heels. They ended up losing despite actually making it close in the last minute and a half. And then a win on the road, their first win away from the Smith Center, or first win in a true road game, at Louisville, who is just a hapless, just plate of pee right now. I have no idea what's going on with that program, but let's start there. Sherrill, what does the loss to UVA mean for this program right now?
I don't think it means a ton, to be honest. It was an opportunity that they had to get another big win, in KenPom would be top 20, but definitely a Q1 win and a really big road win that probably would have given them some confidence moving forward that maybe they don't have right now. So anytime you're up 9 in the first half and 7 in the second half, it's not great to lose, but for me, it's hard to be too upset considering what they were without. To UVA is a big deal. No matter what, no matter how loaded the UNC team the last decade, it loses at UVA. So the fact they were able to stay in it without Armando Bacot for 39 minutes and without Pete Nance the entire game, I think it could end up being a really big moment for the season if things turn around, just because it forced some other guys who hadn't played and hadn't been in primary roles to be in those. And so they're kind of getting a trial by fire type deal, especially with Jalen Washington. I think that was a huge moment for the season. But I don't take too much from the UVA loss other than most good Carolina teams the last decade go up there and lose. So it's not anything new. I would say I was actually more encouraged, not by the end result, but just the fact they were able to hold their own, even though this isn't a vintage UVA team, it's still a good one.
I mean, it's a UVA team that climbed as high as second in the country this year at one point. They've got three losses on the resume, but they've been good losses against really, really good competition. I do think you're spot on in a sense that there have been much better UNC teams that have gone to UVA and just absolutely gotten shellacked. So it is weird. There's a bit of a bugaboo around playing in JPJ Arena right now. Sean, I want to come to you and ask you kind of the flip side of the coin. Tar Heels won at Louisville. Louisville has beaten, like, you know, Florida A&M, and then, you know, the Sisters of the Poor, Tech State University Institute of Technology. They are an absolute train wreck, and it's hard to wrap our head around. But instead of talking about Louisville, what can you take away from the fact that North Carolina won at the Popcorn Chicken Mexican Pizza Center this week?
Sure. Given their record and given what the spread was, you expected a blowout, but I was definitely a little nervous coming in, especially going under the, thinking Armando Bacot was not going to play. And for me, the question came to how will UNC get to 70 points? And I was trying to figure that out, but regardless, you were going to need some people to step up. And we definitely saw that with Puff Johnson in double figures and DeMarco Dunn as well, continuing to improve. So I think that was really one of the takeaways for me, was just the continued bench play. To Sherelle's point, at UVA, they were forced to step up Jalen Washington in the first half, but it also got others some playing time. And I think, you know, right now you look at the team, and last year when they were peaking, they really had four players that could easily get you 20 points. So scoring was not an issue. Now it's Armando and RJ. So you got only two players, with Caleb with the potential, but obviously not having the best of seasons up to right now. So you really need to get the other players comfortable and understand roles and what they can do. I think when we did see UVA in the second half, they had two bench players that have very quickly established, one a freshman, one probably 24 years old, but they know what their roles are, and they're going to contribute. And I think that's what UNC needs to really define, instead of trying to figure out things on the fly of putting in, whether it's Seth or DeMarco, Washington, you know, whoever it is. I think that's always going to be a piece of it, going on the fly. But at the same time, if you're comfortable with DeMarco getting 15 minutes, and if Seth Trimble, you know what you're going to get defensively, now you got to bring him along offensively. But I think that was one of the key takeaways, was just they got to 70 points, and they did that by getting other people involved.
Yeah, I do think a lot of folks were shocked to see Armando Bacot play against Louisville. He didn't play as much as I'm sure the coaching staff wanted to, and maybe that foul trouble is kind of a blessing in disguise. But I want to stay there and talk about the bench contributions. I was lucky enough to fill in for Tommy and do the post-game podcast with Dewey Burke, and we talked about just how so many different guys, to your point, Sean, had stepped up and played good minutes, deep minutes against Louisville. Specifically, I mean, you're looking at DeMarco Dunn's line. It was as sexy as a Teddy Pendergrass slow song, and it was amazing to see him shoot so well. I think he was 5 for 7. He finished in double figures. He had five rebounds, a steal, or a couple of steals, and a block shot. I mean, it's just the type of stuff that you really want to see from your bench. And for all the hand-wringing and clamoring that folks have been making about Hubert Davis's playing rotations, Sean, I want to ask you, are we starting to see a bench develop based on just what we've seen in the last 2 weeks or last two games?
I certainly hope so, because it is going to be necessary versus playing a few guys in the first half and seeing what works, and maybe they get a few minutes in the second half. But, you know, DeMarco Dunn didn't really play much at all his freshman year and has been steadily improving. I was definitely a little frustrated with him at some small points in the UVA game. A quick shot, he played well in the first half, but a quick shot here from three, and then that last three to McNeely, you know what he's going to do. He's shooting from three. He's not driving to the basket, and DeMarco had his hand down on that one. But you go in today, and it took him just a little bit of time, but he's able to impact the game without needing the ball, and we saw that with the first offensive rebound and the putback. And I think that's what those guys need to do, is how do you impact the game without the ball, or without knowing you're gonna get an outside shot, and if you can cut to the basket, if you can rebound, and he rebounds very aggressively from offensive perspective, and that just helps you get going. So now when you are catching a catch and shoot three, you've got your legs under you, and you're a little more comfortable. I know from a defensive perspective, I think he definitely has potential. He's definitely been scored on a fair amount. And I know Adrian's stop percentage, I think he was pretty low in that at the time. But once again, he's still pretty much a freshman from playing time perspective. And you can see him starting to get a little bit more comfortable on both sides of the ball. But going back to what we just talked about, last year they had four guys that you knew could get you 20 very consistently towards the end. And they don't have that this year, and they're not going to have that. So they need a guy that can get you 8 to 10, I think, consistently off the bench to help offset some of what they had last year.
Sherelle, when Bacot went down early against UVA, the fact that Pete Nance was already out and that Will Shaver is unavailable for the rest of the season was really evident. And what that did is it forced Hubert Davis's hand a little bit, in a sense that the only guy left was Jalen Washington. And I know that you've been a big fan of Jalen Washington since, you know, you started following him for IC for recruiting purposes. Can you really understate how comfortable he's looked in the minutes that he's gotten, specifically when he got 20 some minutes or essentially more in the game against Virginia than he's gotten all year? Because I feel like the kid looks really, really comfortable in there right now.
He does. And I wanted to touch on Dunn real quick before we go to Jalen. Dunn, you kind of look at his numbers and, you know, everything doesn't quite match up with the eye test. You think maybe he's struggling a little bit more with his shooting, or you think maybe his defense isn't as good. But conference play only, he's 5 of 11 from three. So that's 45%, which is good in conference only.
You'll take that.
Good opponents for the season. Even though he's only taken 19, he's at 42%. So that's what you want from, you know, your wing off the bench, your kind of two guard three off the bench. Also funny.
I want to stick here because we talked about this in a previous podcast. We also talked about it prior to the season. I don't think anybody saw him getting the minutes that he's gotten. And Dewey said on the post game, the fact that he was hurt and immediately got back into the rotation as soon as he was physically able shows the trust that he has earned from Hubert Davis and that staff. Go ahead, Sherelle.
Yeah, and the game that he came back in was against one of the best teams in the conference, it turns out, and he was in at very key moments after not having played for a month. So to your point, that definitely shows how much he's trusted. I found it interesting, though, that, you know, on KenPom, you can look at kind of players who have similar profiles based upon their numbers. And one of his four is Kerwin Walton, 2022. So
stop.
I thought that was very interesting.
All right.
When it comes to Jalen, what I like about Jalen is that he's always had that soft touch on his shot. I think everybody sees it. It's immediately identifiable. He can make his free throw. So if he gets fouled, which is happening a lot because he just doesn't have the strength yet to finish through contact. So some of those that might be and ones in a year right now are, you know, two shots, and he's able to make his free throw. So that's great. But as far as just what he's been through, like, you know, so he had an ACL injury his junior. So first off, he broke a leg, I think it was. It was towards the end of his freshman year in high school, played through his sophomore year. Everything was okay. And he tore his ACL. Then COVID happened. Then he came back and played, not realizing that the ACL surgery had been kind of done. I don't want to say botched because that's mean, but it hadn't been done the best and needed to be repaired. During that time, he had another injury that was caused by the fact that the ACL wasn't repaired correctly. And then he had to have surgery to get everything fixed and was out for about 10 months as far as like basketball or whatever. But if you look at his last real game playing heavy minutes was at an AAU tournament in July of 2021. And then he plays a few minutes, gets Georgia Tech, a couple of minutes here or there. And then against arguably the best defensive team in the conference, against arguably the best team in the conference, comes in and plays more minutes he's ever played and looks really, really good for that first half. You know, it trailed off in the second half. I think you can call that fatigue or whatever. But
absolutely.
You see the natural skills. You see the IQ. You see the hands. You see all of it there. It's just a matter of him getting more playing time, getting healthier, getting stronger, and you see why everybody loved him prior to the injuries.
You have to get excited if you're listening to this podcast, if you can consider what some strength and conditioning work for his lower body may do for his game. Because like Sherelle said, he's got all the little stuff already. You can see the potential there right now. And if he gets to a place where he can work through contact. And let's be honest, he wasn't getting manhandled against UVA. Most of the time when you see these guys, and Sherelle, you and Sean have done a great job setting this up. Most of the time when you see these guys come in, their lower bodies are where their weaknesses are. And he's got a long way to go there, but he did not by any means get shoved around or abused against UVA. I think it's like you said, I think he just got tired.
And then, against Louisville on Saturday, I really liked the times that he was in the game with Baycott together. Mm-hmm. It seemed like everything flowed well. He knew how to give it. It was like he knew how to play with Baycott. Like he's played with other bigs before. He's never been just the only center or the only four on the court. Just the spacing was good. The ball moved well. He's also a good passer. I just really liked that particular lineup. I'm not sure why. I'm sure the plus minus numbers will come back saying something different, but just eye test, it looked and flowed well. And when he gets comfortable, because he can shoot the three, when he gets comfortable actually doing it and doesn't think about it, that's going to really, really bode well because he's a good shooter out to 3-point line.
Well, and he catches it in rhythm. He looks prepared to shoot when it comes to him. And the fact that he's taken a couple quickly shows that the staff has given him the green light in practice, at least to take it. Sherelle, I want to ask you kind of a tougher question to talk about. The bench development has been a positive that fans should feel better about. One of the things I think is a bit of a bugaboo for this squad, defense has been where Hubert Davis wants them to improve, right? One of the things specifically I think that is a problem, we saw it against UVA, you saw it really badly against Louisville. This team gives up a lot of points in the paint. I want to ask you, why is that still such a big deal for this team? Why is it still such just such a point of failure for them?
I think it starts with your junior guards. I mean, we're not here to pile on people, but neither of them, I would say, is playing at a defensive level that they would like. RJ Davis, I think some of his stuff is just limitations, honestly. It's very easy for some of those 6'3", 6'4", guards, and we've seen it a ton, to just take him, the old Mark Jackson style where you dribble 20 times and drag him into the paint and just shoot over the top of him.
Back him down for 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, that's been the game plan for some teams. I mean, Pittsburgh did it a ton on switches whenever they would get one of the bigger guys on RJ. So that's part of it. And then I think Caleb, he's playing inconsistent defense. I think there are times where he's pretty solid defensively. And I think there's times where, either he has a lapse or he's tired or, his offense isn't flowing, so it doesn't help his defense. But he just has lapses. And, the UVA game, is the perfect example. He hits the three, cuts to the three, and the next possession is kind of like he and the team just, forgot about Beekman, and he gets a dunk and the game's over. Like the easiest play of the entire game. So I think for them, it's just consistency. And I know that's frustrating for fans in particular to hear because they played so many games, but I can't equate it to anything else besides that. It's just, trying to get more consistent. And the issue, I think, overall is that you would love to play different people who maybe have more skill defensively or more talent defensively or can move better laterally, but nobody has been able to sync up their offense and defense. So like if you take one person out, then the person who may come in, their offense might not be as good. So there's no one who has a really great balance right now. And I think they're working through that.
Yeah. That's been one of the things that frustrates me about some of the discourse, both on the message boards and online, about, subbing this player out or trying to fix some of UNC's problems, is because, I don't know if there's anybody on the roster. And I do think, the coaches know enough about these guys. I don't think there's anybody on the roster that is going to fix the holes that UNC has without creating other deficiencies that need some fixing. Sean, I want to ask you schematically, is there something UNC can do to maybe wall off some of those points in the paint?
It's a good question. I mean, from a Caleb perspective, I feel like even in this game, when opponents are going one-on-one with him, I feel like he's playing pretty good defense for almost 90% of it. But he is letting players get into the paint. And once they get into the paint, even though he's contesting, they're hitting their shots almost every time. I think we saw UVA in the second half, their goal, almost similar to Kansas in the championship game, was, hey, let's get our, let's start attacking these guards. And it was almost kind of a downhill effect given their size and length and just being able to go one-on-one. Part of it is also Pete Nance, pretty good shot blocker, pretty good size. So they haven't had him. So it's really been Armando that's been trying to control the paint. Without him, you lose that. Washington's still working on his overall awareness. But to Hubert's point, after UVA, a lot of it is you need to be able to guard your guy one-on-one. I still think pick and rolls, they can improve on what they're doing. I mean, I did love it when they were blitzing the ball handler a lot more, but they've gone away from that really since the Michigan game. But I think that's really just what the one-on-one defense is a huge component. They have stopped over helping as much as they used to. So they're not wildly chasing the ball around the perimeter, giving up 3-point shots. So that has been an improvement for the most part. But defensively, you look at the offensive rankings, top 12, 15 from an efficiency standpoint, but it's still that defense that's in the 60s. And when things get going for the other team, it's hard to stop the ball from rolling downhill at times.
And can I jump in, Sean? Last year it was kind of a similar situation where the defense was in the 70s and 80s. And then as the run started, it went from, the 60s into the 40s. And by the Final Four, I want to say it was like top 20.
There was a point, there was a point statistically where UNC was outside of the top 100 in January last year.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Yep.
I mean, I'd also love, I know we've talked about Leaky in turn, is he fully healthy? And I don't think anybody's ever been able to say if there is an issue or if he is fully healthy. Obviously he's still doing a great job defensively, but you can see when he is put on those smaller guards, it's almost like we're going back into that pre-home Virginia Tech game where he can get beat off the dribble pretty easily by a quick guard. He still makes life difficult with his wingspan, but it's almost he has to be put on really that 6'5" or above wing or small forward, because what he was showing in that run where he was just locking anybody he touched down, that hasn't been the case, and people have been able to get a step on him and get to the rim on him as well. So that it's a tough build to live up to, but he has not been at the standards he set for himself in that run last year, which is a difficult bar to meet, but still a point.
Sure. Sean, I want to ask you for a comment on what I saw today, and I don't know that I've seen it more than a possession or two earlier this year, if it's been that much, but I saw some cowards defense today from Hubert Davis, a little bit of zone thrown out there. And I know it may have just been to protect his gimpy big man who was already kind of playing with four fouls. But just want to see if you'll make a comment about what Hubert Davis did by throwing that zone out there late in the game against Louisville.
I did do a double take when I did see it, but I liked it in terms of trying something different. The end result, at least in the first two possessions, were missed shots. However, it kind of seemed like same old thing where they give up a wide open corner three on that first possession. Usually, I mean, you could go back to the 04-05 Roy Williams teams when they do a little 1-3-1 and all of a sudden 5-6 seconds left on the shot clock and first possession, a guy's getting a wide open corner three and they're knocking it down. Second possession, I think it was a shot in the paint that they missed. So the holes were there. But at the same time, I would like to see them mix it up a little bit more. And I wish they did have a few different zone defenses or even going to we've talked about the full court. I think they did it softly one time against Louisville and without any trapping, did it late against UVA. UVA is going to be, with Keke Clark, a tough team, especially with probably how everybody was feeling just from a stamina perspective, but would love to see that. And even in the half court, just the traps on the ball handler and trying to be the aggressor in creating turnovers, which we know is not their strong suit.
You think they practice that? I'm not even being funny. I'm serious because, we know Baycott didn't practice for most of the week, and mm-hmm. you know, RJ Davis had four fouls. Jalen Washington had four fouls. Bacot had four fouls. I wonder if it was a situation where they were just like, you know, they were up, what, where they were up 20 or something, 19?
Yeah, it was just, it was 19 when he went to it.
Yeah, just get up, you know, just hang out for a couple of minutes until, you know, they saw this one away. I do wonder if it was even practice.
It could have been some of that. I think there may be some credence to that, Sherrill. Well, Sean, I appreciate you commenting on that. It was noticeable, and I do think you make a great point. You know, a lot of times in the past when Roy Williams teams would do that, by the time the fan base realized what was going on, the other team had scored off of it, and then Roy never broke it out again. So it was weird to see Hubert Davis shake it up today at the time in the game, which he did. I don't appreciate seeing zone defense as much, but I do appreciate Johnny T-shirt. Johnny T-shirt is your stop for UNC gear. They are big sponsors of Inside Carolina, the content that we provide to all subscribers and listeners and viewers of this show and all the other great podcast content that IC puts out there. Johnny T-shirt is where you need to go. It was quite a bit chilly this weekend in the Triangle area of North Carolina. And if you were without a coat or without a jacket and you need something with that UNC logo on it, hit up JohnnyT-shirt.com. They'll take care of you. If you're a premium subscriber to Inside Carolina, you know you get that extra 10% off the top of your already great prices. Johnny T-shirt's where you need to be. I can't say any more about them. They're great folks, locally owned, alumni operated. They support us. We want you to support them. We're glad they're along for the ride anytime we're talking to you on Inside Carolina. Take a quick break. Let the national guys drop some of their ads in here. We'll be right back to talk a little recruiting. I think there's been a lot going on in that scene too. Sherrill and Sean will help us break that down when we come back on the Coast to Coast podcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for sticking around. We appreciate you being a part of the show. Appreciate you consuming this content here and wanting to be a part of Inside Carolina. I'm Joey Powell, Sherrill McMillan, Sean Moran with us here on the Coast to Coast. Boys, there was a pretty big tilt between some recently committed Tar Heels this week on the hardwood in the high school ranks. We saw Elliot Cadeau against James Brown at the Bass Pro Shops Carolina Rig Firetail Fishing Worm with a double offset bullet sinker fishing tournament, basketball tournament. And Sherrill McMillan kind of has some updates from that. But Sherrill, what was your first impression as Link beat St. Rita's 74-52?
Well, I think the first thing is shout out to Eric Bossy, 24/7's national recruiting director.
All over it.
He was at the tournament, and in addition to giving us updates, he also got some audio, which we turned into a story. If you haven't read, actually, it's free, about James Brown and Elliot Cadeau kind of recruiting Ian Jackson, as well as just their overall feel for each other, which I thought was interesting. It's not really a fair fight, considering how many high major future NBA players that Link Academy has. St. Rita don't, you know, isn't, it has talent. You know, let's not think it doesn't have talent. It has three guys who've already committed to Power Five schools. So they're not, to your point, sisters of the poor technical university agricultural state or anything like that. What I liked about Cadeau, again, he only plays about 20 minutes a game just because they're so loaded. But when he's in the game, it really is the control that he has. I don't like player comparisons, you know that, but just the way the game becomes so easy to him, it reminds me of Chris Paul. As dynamic, I would say, but just always in control, always looking ahead, always knowing the counter and the counter to the counter and the next pass and the pass after the next pass and what to do once the next pass goes, you know, reverse to the other side of the court. He knows everything that's going to happen, it feels like, on the court. And then, you know, his ball handling is very, very tight. Not a lot of turnovers. And the one thing that we've talked about a lot, Sean, I'm stealing it from you since you put it in there, is that UNC's transition really hasn't been fully operational since Kobe White, you know, left Chapel Hill.
Fully operational. I love that.
Yeah, it hasn't been fully operational since then. And I think with Cadeau, it'll get back to that. He's very good at throwing lobs, and he throws them from pretty much every angle and every part of the court. So that's pretty impressive. Obviously, as we said, the jump shot is something that needs to continue to improve. He's not a bad shooter by any stretch, but just more consistency with that. And then Brown, actually, in addition to the game against Link Academy, I went back and watched a few of his games over the year, over the last year. St. Rita, I think, is 8-7. So I probably watched two or three games. Mm-hmm. And just really impressed, more so than I remember, about his rebounding ability, mm-hmm. His motor. I mean, that's gonna give him, you know, 6 or 8 points a game just from motor and just chasing stuff down. Mm-hmm. It's gonna give him 5 or 6 rebounds a game just from chasing stuff down and playing hard. And he runs the floor so well. He gets up and down really quickly. So, you know, just two really, really good commitments from UNC. Brown is, I think, a couple, you know, 2-3 years guy at UNC. I think he could be really, really good, like, you know, high level, right in that sweet spot, the 25 to 30, who has just enough deficiencies to stay in college, but is really good in college. And then Cadeau, obviously, is that top 10 type who could be there for a year. But, you know, Carolina just hasn't had the type of point guard he is in a while.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen of Cadeau's video, the boy keeps it on a rope quite a bit. And from James Brown, I like your point about motor, Sherelle, because I was watching some video from him and Brother Rice and some of his other games, and he seems to be around the ball a lot. And I don't know if that's just weak side positioning or just understanding where rebounds are going to come from, but that's just a knack that you always want guys that have that before they get to college. Sean, what did you think about being able to see a little bit more of Cadeau and James Brown?
Well, for James Brown, I think what Sherelle just hit on was something that jumped out to me. Seeing him back in the summer was that rebounding ability and that tenacity, especially on the offensive glass. I know for me, the big question is, how is UNC going to look post Armando Bacot? They've already kind of lost their offensive rebounding identity besides for him. And it would be great not to fully lose it. So that's always something I'm watching in the bigs. And for Brown, he does have that just tenacity to go after it, the ability to finish, you know, with either hand close to the basket. And I think for him, we're going to continue seeing double doubles, you know, in the high school games. And once they get back into the Chicago League play as well, I think for him, one thing I want to see, I know he can hit the jump shot, kind of a 15 footer, but if he could get that down consistently, I think that could really make him valuable as a freshman. You know, not asking to step out and knocking down three pointers at a 40% clip, but I think if he can continue working on that 15 footer, that can really help his game and help him when he gets to UNC. And then in terms of Cadeau, you know, nothing new to add. He continues playing at a high clip, and playing in, once again, as Sherelle mentioned, playing 20 minutes a game. So he's playing in these different settings. And we know he does have the ability to take over and be the go-to guy from a scoring perspective. But it is that passing ability and the control, which I think UNC fans will love once he does get to Chapel Hill, and just being able to run the break, see those alley-oops and get everybody involved.
Sherelle, is it too early for fans to start thinking about, you know, and I know it depends largely on who else is on the roster with him, to start thinking back to some Kendall Marshall pitch aheads, or dare I say, even some Ed Kotas?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, he's that kind of passer. He is. I mean, the other night he had 8 assists and it didn't look like he was particularly trying that hard. Not saying he wasn't. It just, he's so smooth that it looks like it's not even a thing for him. He can just see everything a step ahead.
In control. I mean, it's just he looks in control. I love that. Sherelle, I want to talk a little bit about Ian Jackson. I think, you know, he had his visit this past weekend. I want to I want to see what you can share, because it seems like maybe that recruitment may or may not be coming to an end quicker than folks thought. There was kind of a scuttlebutt that popped up this past week that maybe there was, maybe there's not. Share what you know and what you think with regard to Mr. Jackson.
Okay, so let's paint the picture. All right, so Ian Jackson heads to the UNC visit. In it, we write that a Jackson-UNC marriage is unlikely based upon things we've heard from sources with varying perspectives. And I want to emphasize that, because what that means is it's not just coming from one side. It's coming from national folks, or, you know, people familiar with UNC or people familiar with Jackson. It's, you know, kind of all encompassing. The visit happens, and by pretty much the admission of everyone, it kind of blew him away. He was a little surprised maybe that it blew him away. And people who are normally very subdued about this kind of thing were like, yeah, it was a great visit. So that, I think, has fueled some optimism among the UNC fan base that maybe it's not as unlikely as it seemed heading into the visit. And while we don't exactly know if it is, we know that he's considering making an announcement at HoopBall, which is this weekend. We'll talk about that in a second. As of the time we're recording this, he has not made any announcement of a potential announcement time. As far as a decision, we also talked about kind of an accelerated timeline. I think that's what got fans also pretty excited. Really, it's about 2 weeks earlier than he expected. He's said kind of consistently that he wanted to do it towards the end of January, early February. So all that to say, post-visit, I don't know. I can tell you what we thought pre-visit, and we haven't really had anything to confirm that something has changed. That's not saying that it hasn't, just that we haven't been able to confirm that. So in the absence of new information, we're going to kind of go with what we have, and we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, we make the joke about this off the air, but anytime we record one of these shows, something always happens right after the show gets done and we sign off. So we'll see if that happens with this one, or if that streak is broken. Sean, there's been a lot going on this weekend as well with the HoopBall Classic. That's typically one of the bigger events sponsored by the Hall of Fame. This weekend, we've got the aforementioned Ian Jackson, as well as Sim Wilcher, Boogie Fland, and Zayden High's teams in that. Anything folks should be looking for, or anything that you're looking for when you watch those games?
Yeah, I'm most excited about the Roselle Catholic and Paula 6 game, which might have been played by the time this drops, which is Sunday at 5:30. But I think was able to watch Wiltshire earlier this week. I mean, their team is loaded. So when they're playing some of these local New Jersey games.
Not team loaded. Their team is loaded.
Correct. Not the AAU team, but they're basically playing an AAU team in Paula 6, which is team takeover. But in terms of earlier this week, they won by 40 plus points. So there's a lot of talent. Simeon Wiltshire is not a me first guy. I want him to be more aggressive offensively, but that's not, he's really a pass first type of player. But, you know, at the start of the game, he airballed a 3-pointer. Came right back, drove hard down the middle for a pretty impressive dunk. So didn't really get to, you know, you got to see him in that game, but really looking forward to a high level of competition. And with the recruiting class for 2023, he's, you know, there's two guys in it. He's going to play a big role. I think he's going to be a tantalizing type of prospect where you see the talent, but it's going to take him a little while to become maybe more aggressive than he's accustomed to being, but looking forward to seeing his game against, really more of an AAU type level of competition.
We should do a trivia question. You mentioned team loaded, Joey. How many,
far away.
How many players on UNC's team? We should get a reader to send it in. How many players on UNC's current team played some with team loaded? Now for the emphasis on some, or at least a season with team loaded.
I can think of three.
Okay. We'll have a reader send it in.
We got okay. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. So all if you're right. Listening, send that in.
Yeah. Send it to Sherelle on the message boards, or hit us up on the social medias. Sherelle, anything else you want to add about the HoopBall Classic?
Yeah, just that, again, depending on when you listen to this, if you're listening to it on Sunday morning, you can watch Dayton High on ESPN at 4, and you can watch Wilcher, as Sean said, at 5:30 on ESPN, and then you can watch Ian Jackson at 9 p.m. all on ESPN. And then Monday, Zayden High and Compass Prep play at 5 p.m. on ESPN. So a few opportunities to watch UNC signees/targets.
And again, if this comes out after those games have played, forgive us, Sherrill, still giving you accurate information. It may just be passed by the time you get this. So don't fault us. All right, boys, two pennies time. Sean, anything else you want to add before we get out of here today?
Yeah, you might cut me off. I'll have one normal one and go real quick on some other thoughts. But RJ Davis, you know, he offensively has been playing tremendous in the ACC, shooting almost 44% from three in ACC play. He was shooting below 30% for a while, but you know, he's been playing very well. The shot has started to go down for him, 57% from three over the last four games. And that three he hit against Louisville in that first half to go with the Styles dunk. I mean, I think in a bigger picture, a lot of their losses, you feel like UNC has been the better team. And it's really been, what's that lead at the first, you know, UVA, it's 2 points. It probably should have been 7-9. Same with Iowa State, same with others. So I think that just goes from a bigger picture perspective of they're the better team. They need to get those bigger leads because a team is going to make a run. And when they do, it needs to be cut to 7 or 8 versus all of a sudden it's a 2-point game. And now everything gets a little bit tighter. So props to RJ for what he's been doing. And then a few very quick things. Caleb Love, obviously struggling a lot from three offensively. It's almost like he's kind of reverted back to freshman year Caleb offensively. And the one shot he did hit was the pull-up from about 17 feet. And I think that's what he needs to focus on right now because he can get that shot even more, a lot more so than he could freshman year. But it's something he's comfortable with and I think can knock down on a very consistent basis. So I'd love to see him do that a little bit more rather than aiming some of these threes that he's taking. And then real quick, Seth Trimble didn't score, but I did love him even when he got called for the charge, attacking the basket.
Garbage call. Absolutely garbage call, but please go ahead.
Without hesitation and starting to show some of that ability in the air. But for him, it just has to be quick movements, get to that pull-up jump shot, which I don't think we've really seen at all this year, or get to the basket. You know, who cares if you get a charge, just be aggressive. And then Leaky Black, you know, had 4 points. I think he's got to be getting in 10 points a game, just given Bacot's injury and Pete Nance out, and he's got to find a way to get to that 10 points and be a factor offensively, whether that's a short mid range, a three, a steal, whatever it is. But I think that's going to be another piece in terms of them continuing to improve themselves.
Yeah, and I do want to make sure I point out, I mean, you know, Caleb Love's 3-point streak did end at Louisville of consecutive games with hitting a 3-pointer, but he did get a runner against Louisville. He did hit one of those through contact that wasn't called. So it was, again, it's nice to see. You know, there are also other players playing for other schools that are getting 18 points on 22 shots. And yeah, you know, I think a lot of folks are fixated on Caleb because of how mercurial his game is. But Dewey said in the post game after Louisville, I think Dewey still thinks after Louisville that Caleb's going to be able to shoot his way out of this. And I know a lot of Tar Heel fans hope the same thing. Sherrill, you got two pennies for me?
I've got a few.
We only allow two here unless you disguise them the way Sean did and say, all right, I got one, and then like 4, 5, 6, 7, like right after that. But have at it, man.
So one basketball, one in basketball. So pushing it forward to next week, we probably won't talk again until after these next two games are played. So they are two home games, home against Boston College. Boston College struggles to do anything offensively. They're among the worst at pretty much every shooting statistic in the country. So that'll probably be a very close game the way UNC is playing this year. But that's a game that you have to win, that you should win against the team, you know, in the lower half of Division I. And then that brings up Saturday, January 21st, where you have a pretty hot NC State team coming to Chapel Hill. And that's a big game for a bunch of reasons, mostly because State and North Carolina's kind of resumes aren't that much different. You could say the State has better wins on the aggregate than UNC. They have top 50 KenPom wins over Miami, over Virginia Tech, over Duke, and they played Kansas really, really, really tough back in November. And they also beat Dayton, who also is, you know, I think top 55, top 60 on KenPom. Terquavion Smith is, you know, one of the best scorers in the league, so that's going to be a challenge for UNC's guards. So just it hasn't been many times where an NC State-UNC game meant something outside of the rivalry, but this is going to be one of those times. State is a good team, and UNC is going to have to play their best to win at home. So that's coming up. So an important week. You know, you kind of want to get momentum and start stacking wins on top of each other, because you start looking at it and it's going to be February and there's not going to be a ton of games left for UNC.
And the schedule gets considerably tougher after that Boston College game. I mean, you mentioned NC State. Joyner can score. Terquavion Smith, who you mentioned, can score. And the big post player they've got, I mean, that kid is a bruiser and is not afraid to get some buckets around the basket.
So I'm going to give myself some credit, because I've always liked DJ Burns. And even when he went to Tennessee and didn't play, when he transferred out, like, I don't know. I just like the kid. He has a cousin who played football at Carolina. I won't put his name out there, but a first cousin who was a running back at Carolina back in the day.
He knows the DJ Burns knows who he is. He knows what his job is, and he does it effectively. And I've always been a fan of guys that earn their five fouls, and he is one of those dudes that earns five.
And so that's tough for Armando. I won't say tough because he's a little shorter, but he's a big body that Armando's going to have to go to. And if Armando's out, UNC doesn't have anyone really that can guard him from a strength perspective. So just thinking about that and that matchup moving forward, that's one penny. All that is one. The second
sir.
I like it.
Sir, that was a penny. Very circuitous penny that you went with there. All right, go ahead.
All right, done basketball. Just a shout out to my guy, Andrew Batchelor. He had his first child today. So
baby Batch.
Yeah, so they're 1-0. His daughter, him and his wife, Mary Reeves. Also, he wouldn't mind me saying this, but it's their wedding anniversary. So their first child was born on the day of their wedding anniversary.
Whoa.
Which is
unique. That is that dude. That is elite level planning.
Yeah.
That's going to make his gift giving pretty consolidated. He's going to have to be a very efficient gift giver, and we like to talk about efficiency and, you know, points per present here. So that's going to have to be a
2.5 weeks after Christmas.
Yeah, that's my man is under the gun there. So I see that credit card bill a little while. All right, what else you got? You're throwing pennies at me like I'm a fountain at the mall here. Let's go.
That's my two. That's it.
All right. Well, you had me thinking you were going to have like a good 7 or 8, but those are two good ones. Shout out to Batch and Baby Batch and Mrs. Batch. So that's good stuff for Mr. Batchelor over there. All right, boys. This has always been fun. I appreciate the time you guys give to the show. Appreciate the insight you always bring. You make me smarter, which doesn't say much, but it's definitely a low bar to work with, and I appreciate you being who you are and bringing so much to the show. Shout out to everybody who listened, everybody who viewed us on the YouTubes there. Special shout out to Johnny T-Shirt for sponsoring, and always to John Siegley for producing. But until next time, for Sherelle McMillan, for Sean Moran, I'm just Joey Powell. This has been the Coast to Coast Podcast here on InsideCarolina.com. We'll talk at you later.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.